This is the December 10 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Aaron Curtis from Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois, Ellen Dearden of AgriView in Morton, Illinois, and Mike Zuzla at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. And while you're there, if you scroll down, you'll find a link to sign up for the last one or two of the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. These are the presentations being made by the Ag Economist. We're usually out and about in the state of Illinois. Not this year. More than 1,500 have signed up. Why don't you as well? They're free right there at Illinois Farm Economic Summits. On Friday morning of this week, we'll talk about farm policy with Jonathan Kappas and look forward into the next 4 years in the 2023 Farm Bill. And on Tuesday of next week, at 11 o'clock, and these are all at 11 o'clock Central Time, we'll take up the price of farmland with Bruce Sherrick, and he is the director of the Farmland Research Center in the College of Aces right here on campus. So it should be a good place for you to get signed up right now. Free registration at Illinois Farm Economic Summits, farmdocdaily.illinois.edu, or just scroll down at willag.org. Let's get a list of items that maybe we should talk about for the day. Aaron Curtis, I know we'll have the USDA report on our list. What else is on yours?
Well, we've seen basis levels kind of level off here a little bit. A lot of movement going on in this DSJAN time frame. You know, what does that mean here going forward? What does that kind of tell us? And you know, back to the USDA report, the first time we've seen a report close, at least on beans, close lower since the July crop report. And that includes the grain stocks report back in the end of September. So quite a run from the USDA here. So did we learn anything different here today to set us up here for the next few weeks?
Ellen Dearden from AgriView.
As we look at current prices and guys are starting to make plans for planting in North America, or at least establishing some planting plans, how's that going to shake out for this 21 crop year?
And Mike Zuzlo.
The only thing to add would be, you know, the longer-term technicals, the oscillators, the momentum indicators in the grains right now, especially corn and beans, are pretty stuck up pretty high, and they've been up pretty high for quite a bit of time, Todd. And that always makes me nervous, especially as we go into the winter time. But I wonder if the USDA report and the weather in South America can't help us stay elevated for a little bit longer period of time.
Well, tell me about the technicals and what concerns you.
Well, the monthly charts and the weekly charts are, in terms of a stochastic or an RSI, are running at the highest levels and have been running at their highest levels for, you know, probably around two and a half months. So we've elongated a very overbought condition in corn and beans. And we noticed that there was some fund reduction in the last commitment of traders, but not a lot. And that didn't surprise me because I think mostly small specs have been getting in and out because of the South American weather, whereas the funds have been buying on the reflationary trade. But this goes back to what we faced the last 3 or 4 years before we had different fundamentals, and that was the funds really like the technicals. They really like the momentum indicators, and I really just want to be cognizant of that as I get more warmed up and more friendly fundamentally about the supply-demand situation.
Well, let's take a look at that supply-demand situation. Aaron Curtis, you wanted to talk about movement in the December-January time frame as it relates to basis. Of course, this is the fundamentals of the marketplace. What do you see?
Well, just based on the movement that we've seen, you know, from the farmer, you know, obviously very aggressive across the scale during this harvest period with prices reacting, you know, really since August, we've rallied corn futures $1, bean futures, you know, pretty much $3. So the farmer participated, like we've talked about previously, Todd. We estimate the farmer, you know, 60 to 65% sold on corn and 75%-ish on soybeans. So been very active. And, you know, especially on the bean side, we've seen a lot of movement. You know, we got the Jan-March inverse out to 28 cents here a few weeks ago. And boy, that told everybody that was watching, you know, no sense in carrying beans. So a lot of movement happened on the bean side. You know, we're talking lower Illinois River delivery times, 2 to 3 hours here. We've seen some pretty healthy lines out in the western part of the United States as everybody tries to get all this grain that they sold moved. And that's going to be the case here as we move through the rest of December and January. Now, you know, don't feel like there's a lot of necessarily end-user coverage on past this Feb-March time frame, and watching this export market pretty closely to see what China's appetite's going to be for U.S. Soybeans in that Feb-March time frame. Not seeing much activity there yet, so I think that'll give us a sense on whether or not China senses any more issues in Brazil. But, you know, just a lot of corn and beans need to get wheels underneath them, especially soybeans here in the next 6 weeks. So we're continuing to hope that weather cooperates. And the other thing we're watching here is low water along the Illinois River in St. Louis. I mean, we're expected to see gauges continue to deteriorate in St. Louis here over the next couple weeks. And, you know, that just means that less beans can be loaded on each individual barge, and that takes more of them, and that just takes a longer process to get all these all this grain down to the Gulf to where it needs to be.
Are you telling me that you expect a weaker bean basis?
I think it's going to stabilize in here. I think the fact that the USDA raised crush again here today tells you that there's still going to be a strong appetite for bean demand. I think we just got to get through this log jam that we've had over these next few weeks. And like I said, not a lot of coverage level on past the spring and summer. So, you know, with a 175 carryout and, you know, some iffiness on South American weather, I think bean basis has a potential to be somewhat volatile here as we move into the latter part of the summer. And I think that's why you're going to see a push towards farmers wanting to plant a short season soybeans, expecting some premiums to happen in that September time frame, Todd.
Alan Dearden, before we get to the acreage battle, and I think we should do that coming off of that comment, I would like you to talk just a little bit about river basis at this point. Usually, at some point in the middle of the year, the Illinois will close parts of the Mississippi as ice shuts it down. Could happen, I suppose, earlier, or just be limited draft on the rivers because of the low water levels. What are you hearing?
The upper Mississippi is already closed, and the Illinois River probably will remain open so long as we've got temperatures like we do right now. I mean, heck, today's almost 60 degrees this afternoon. So the Illinois River's wide open, but the water levels are very low. So that makes it susceptible to a freeze up should we get a week's worth or 10 days worth of really cold temperatures. But the bean basis on the Illinois River has really deteriorated. And it, you know, the market here is all about moving to processors. It's not moving to the river. Now, the corn basis, there's still demand on the river for corn, but the crush is really pulling the beans away from the river.
That would be opposite of what normally would happen or had been happen in previous years, especially if China were into the marketplace. China has been in the marketplace. Does it concern you that beans aren't moving on the river?
A little bit. There was a heavy movement right at harvest on the river of beans, but not so much really since the middle of November. And keep in mind that the last time that we saw a daily sale to China was early in November. So maybe some of that bookings, they're trying to work through bookings. And I noticed that on the export shipments in the last couple weeks that they've taken beans out of almost every port. All the ports on the West Coast, out of the Gulf, out of several Gulf locations, as well as out of Texas. So they're pulling beans out of many different areas. I know the boys in the upper Midwest would sure like to see their bean basis improve and see some rail movement going to the West Coast.
What are you thinking about as it relates to acreage and the battle for bean acres in the spring?
Right now, beans look pretty darn attractive, I think, to a lot of guys. We've got the bean corn ratio tonight at about 2.56. That's really where it was on the spring insurance numbers in 2017 and 2018, however. But I think the glamour of beans is to plant more beans, and certainly in the East Central Illinois area and West Central Indiana, where the bean yields were exceptional this past year, that's going to be very enticing to plant more beans. People have pretty short memories about how good crops were, and the bean crop really rung the bell for a lot of guys.
And that would be a bean area going into Ohio, in fact. There are quite a few beans, tend to be more beans in those areas sometimes than corn. In East Central Illinois, across parts of Indiana, certainly into Ohio. And then, Mike, in your state, Kansas, there are an awful lot of beans. Do you expect more beans to be planted this coming year than this past year?
Yeah, I still think we're going to lose some wheat acres, and probably to both sorghum and to the soybeans. And I've actually been talking to some producers in both sides of the Corn Belt about their non-GMO products, and they're starting to turn away from not organic, because that's a lot harder to get back, but on non-GMO, they're starting to wonder whether they maybe won't go back to conventional. So I think, yeah, with the wheat acreage base susceptible to being ripped up because of the crop conditions, and the fact that we still have sorghum prices about $1.50 over corn prices here, I think that's really going to help isolate the corn from either getting sorghum or bean acres, and maybe leaving the corn out a little bit. One thing, you know, we probably maybe should mention on the freight situation is, I would be nervous about this time period, and this is part of the reason why I brought up my concerns technically. But the export commitments, and Ellen touched on this, the export commitments percent of total right now on week 14 for soybeans is 88% of USDA's expectations. And I think, you know, it doesn't necessarily bother me that much. We're cooling off right now, especially given that some of the freight rates and some of the barge, and especially, you know, some of the ocean freight rates are starting to creep up again. So I think the buyers out there probably have been buying ahead quite a bit because of COVID and because of South American weather, taking a break here during the holidays. But if we keep the South American weather brewing, and we only see 50% coverage in Argentina, and we see USDA cutting Argentine corn and bean production today, and then we also see, you know, continued 70% coverage in Brazil, I think it's less likely that that Argentine producers will sell much, and it's less likely China will cancel much of anything they bought. So it does make it feel different right now from a standpoint of where we're at in price and the slower shipments or the slower export sales pace versus what we become accustomed to.
Aaron, USDA increased domestic crush by 15 million, lowered ending stocks to 175, down 15 million. This morning, on Thursday morning, in the WASD report, are beans in that short of supply around the United States? And how low do you think that number actually might go? There are some thinking it could be much, much lower than it already is.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't feel like it so much right now when you look at what spreads have done here recently and what basis has done. And, of course, we mentioned, you know, some of the lines just in trying to get, you know, grain moved or soybeans moved here over this next time frame. But I think as we continue to move through the second half of the year, we're going to see some continued tightening. I think the USDA largely punted today on both South American production and Brazil exports. I think they decided to sit and wait and see what happens in January. There was some, obviously, appetite that bean exports could continue to be raised here today by 15 to 25 million. Of course, USDA left that unchanged. So I think, you know, realistically, we're probably trading something closer to a 150 carryout. And obviously, this crush market continues to, you know, as that continues to grow, it really just makes the export situation even more highlighted, I think, as we continue to move forward, because the pace we're on right now, only needing to average another 6 or 7 million bushels of bean per sales per week for the rest of the marketing year, which what we've got 7 months to go. Still feels like that USDA is still a little low on the export side, which tightens things up just a little bit more and puts even that much more pressure on Brazil and Argentina moving forward, Todd.
Ellen Dearden, clearly we have been in a weather market for soybeans based on what's happened in Brazil in particular, Argentina as well, dry weather conditions. However, CONAB, in its report showing that the Brazilian crop will be a record breaker if harvested, as it comes in on their latest numbers, I think, 135 million metric tons or something along those lines. That's a big crop. It'll come into the marketplace. Does that concern you?
It's a big crop, and part of the reason that Brazil's crop is going to be big is because we've got increased acreage. I mean, yeah, CONAB was carrying a record, I think, yield as well. And most people have scaled that back, but it's the acreage that's higher looking at Brazil. I was not surprised that Argentina and corn and beans both were lowered 1 million metric tons, but I was surprised that USDA stood pat at 110 on the corn and 133 million metric tons on the beans. I thought that that probably could come down a little bit right here. But obviously, USDA is in the wait-and-see mode these days.
And producers don't have many beans left, but they have some corn left that they'll need to market. That which is in commercial storage the first time around probably will be in early January, potentially. Is there anything that they ought to be doing or thinking about at this time, Ellen?
Well, I one of the things that I've suggested to people that want to go ahead and market corn at this stage of the game is then turn right around and prepay your fertilizer bill. Farmers have some cash because of all the beans that were sold early and really quite a bit of corn sold early. I think they need to start looking ahead and lock in some of those prepay situations that they can do. Aaron thinks that we are going to see the bean basis bounce around as we get into summer. I think the corn basis could turn hot sometime in this spring time period as well. So I'd like to hold at least 15% of my corn for some kind of a move in the spring, early summer.
Aaron, what are your thoughts on corn basis?
No, I think basis has still got some life on the corn side too. Now, we have seen a little bit of weakness here. You know, we've seen some processors back off just a little bit. We've seen Southeast rail markets fade a little bit here this week as well. So, you know, this continued movement that we've seen across the Corn Belt is a depressed basis a little bit. But, you know, the farmer's largely absent from this selling right now. They just haven't been very aggressive at all. It's just, you know, futures market has just been kind of range-bound here a little bit. So I think we're going to have to see a pretty good-sized rally from here to really engage the farmer much more. We've got a lot of corn still to originate for the export program. You know, the soybeans have taken the front seat in terms of shipments. We need to ship, almost 50 or some million bushels a week. I have to look up that exact number, but it's a pretty healthy number that we've got to ship out. So still some origination to go on the export side. A potential headwind there, Todd, that we got to keep a little bit of an eye on is this ethanol sector. You know, we did see ethanol stocks up again for the sixth straight week, the highest that we've seen in months. We did have a little bit better production number overall, but margins continue to be pretty poor. First quarter ethanol margins are not good, and we've seen, you know, some ethanol plants, especially out west, you know, pull some cash bids from February forward. So that's a potential headwind for basis overall. So that's something to keep an eye on. But all in all, expect basis continue to be hang in there and be pretty firm here as we move into that spring time frame.
Mike, your assessment of the corn market?
I think everything that Aaron and Ellen talked about makes a lot of sense to me. I would also add that not just the fertilizer prepay, but I would also say that we've got some refiners going down, or refiners that went down after the hurricane season in Louisiana, and they're not coming back up. And I don't know whether it's because they're nervous about policy or what, but between that and the record amount of weekly imports we brought in on crude oil this past week, I don't like the trend of the energy market in that we could have an excess crude stockpile and really be tight on diesel, especially, and unleaded to a lesser degree. So I've been beating the drum to get springtime diesel needs locked in, especially if you can get a transport price at this stage of the game. I think when it goes to the corn, I am very much in sync with what Aaron's talking about with the ethanol. I think the energy market and the dollar are the two canaries in the coal mine for the potential problems that this COVID spike is going to bring us and the increased unemployment we're seeing. The Thanksgiving holiday driving was the worst since 1997 as far as unleaded or fuel consumption. And so I think we really are starting to see a real hit to be taken on the demand side. So if you are near an ethanol plant, remember what happened this past spring. And I think it really adds to the idea of maybe booking things and then going ahead and defending in the futures market, that sell and defend model. Book your cash, lock your cash bushels in, come back in and get a March or May or July corn call, which I think are still relatively inexpensive given the lower volatility here. I talked to a producer that's an avid Will radio listener in southern Minnesota this past week, and he said that his ethanol plant has stopped giving bids, I believe he said, past February or March. And so I really think you got to be on point with this right now as a producer.
Hey, Todd. 58 million bushels a week we need to average on corn inspections for the rest of the year. So a pretty active pace that we need to get on the shipping side. So a lot of grain still, I think, to originate on that piece of it. So just wanted to clarify that earlier comment on the total there.
Do you that is a big number. Do you think we can hold that for the rest of the year?
I think so. I mean, I think we're still the low-cost provider, and I still think there's some opportunity to export some corn here as we continue to move, especially if Brazil's second corn crop is going to be delayed, even if it is a week to 10 days. So I think the U.S. still stands to benefit here on the corn side for the next few weeks and months.
I wanted to get back to the ethanol question because I know I, too, have subscribers who have not been able to get bids beyond February for corn going into ethanol plants, but I also have livestock subscribers who are unable to buy DDGs out beyond the middle of January, and they are very nervous because they feel like their corn availability is diminishing rapidly, and now the DDGs are not going to be available, and they're just wondering what we're going to feed.
Why would both be diminishing so rapidly? You would think that one or the other would be around.
I think the corn is just out of position for these livestock feeders because they would be in an area that would be corn deficit anyway.
Gotcha. So, but the bottom line there is that it appears that the ethanol plants are worried that COVID-19 is going to slow down mileage or miles driven a great deal going forward, or that there are just building supplies, and I haven't looked. I don't know whether anybody else has that will sustain us after that time frame for a while. Mike, have you bothered to look, or do you have an idea?
Yeah, I mean, I think the majority of it is what you said. I think also, though, there is the policy issue. I've read a couple reports that have talked about the potential for an energy policy shift, especially with Vice President Biden talking to NBC News a couple weeks ago saying that he would make a move on his energy policy in the first 100 days. I think the fossil fuel industry is really moving quickly, more quickly than I could have ever envisioned, into a more green mindset. I actually read, I believe it was in the Wall Street Journal this past week, that I think it was ExxonMobil is getting ready to have a proxy fight where a hedge fund in California, who has amongst them the CalPERS group, which is a massive investment fund for California. They're going to be trying to take four seats from ExxonMobil. And Shell has also been hitting the newspapers in the Financial Times. I think what we're seeing is a much quicker move by the fossil fuel industry to kind of hunker down and not be caught with a bunch of stocks out there. Now, that doesn't mean Asia won't take it. That doesn't mean that Brazil could have a bad sugar crop and all of a sudden we're in the catbird seat. But I think this first quarter of 2021 is really an issue. And so I think what Ellen and Aaron and I are saying is if you're near an export market, you're probably in great shape with corn. If you're near a feedlot or a train that goes to a feedlot, you're probably in great shape. But if you're near an ethanol market, you know, think about your marketing plan here. And if you've got a good basis, why wouldn't you take it and just defend it with futures?
Yeah, well, on that note, the flip side seems on that note, and I've heard this a couple of times, to be that soy diesel or vegetable oil going into fuel might be, because it is considered an advanced fuel under the current RFS, might be the next boon, and the acreage battle could be part and parcel of that, I suppose, though that's limited, I think, Aaron, by our capacity to crush, because it's just not that big.
You know, I would agree, right? I think, you know, veg oils is a whole different topic that we haven't gotten into today, Todd, but whether it be Russian sun oil or Malaysian palm oil or even our Chicago bean oil contract, I mean, just look at some of the volatility we've seen that in a nightly or daily basis, right? I think veg oils in general are going to be the story here, and you know, biodiesel plays a little bit of a role in that as well, but I think veg oils are going to be the topic of conversation here, the way it looks all winter.
And as Mike mentioned to me on Skype here, solar as well, Mike, and there are plenty of folks out there looking to put solar panels up on the farm, and that might be something that producers end up using over time as well, I suppose.
Yeah, especially with the demographic we have, of the age of the producers we have after five bad years, it's really appealing right now in northern Illinois and northern Indiana for clients to be looking at that right now, with $800 to, you know, $900, maybe even $1,000 an acre being talked about as far as, you know, what you could make for the next several years on putting solar panels out. So I do think that this past 5 years is, and the uncertainty of the next 4 years has really changed the dynamic. But getting back to basics, it seems to me that the soybeans have the acreage base secured at these price levels, and it's up to the corn futures market in December to come back in and grab acres. And that's kind of what I'm laying low for at this point, is that kind of an acreage battle later this winter, early next spring.
Are there fundamentals that would suggest corn needs to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think USDA's report, you know, for me, it made me the happiest probably analyst in the country when they took the wheat ending stocks down globally and went actually below the trade forecast, the lowest trade forecast. I'm going to have to go back and look. It's probably been 6 years since we've seen something like that happen. So, and they did it on consumption increases, which is even better because they propped up the Australian crop and the Russian crop in production. I think they're going to have to take those back. So I think you've got a situation where wheat is in a pole position to really command, I think, a better premium, and funds are going to probably be a lot less likely to sell rallies because USDA signaled today that we've dropped prices enough globally that we're increasing demand. And I, again, it's been a long time since we've been able to say that.
Let's get a final word from each of you now. I think Ellen Dearden from Ag Review out of Morton, Illinois, we'll start with you today.
While we can see the bean oil being a leader recently, we certainly want to see the meal catch up if we're going to continue to see beans work higher.
Aaron Curtis from Midco in Bloomington, Illinois.
Yeah, despite the lower close today, I think the markets still have a friendly bias, both corn and soybeans here. Just too much doubt with the South American weather, too much good demand, and I think that's going to continue to underpin futures here over the next few weeks. But, you know, volatility is going to be the name of the game. You know, these 20s we've seen on soybeans are sure feels like they're kind of here to stay here for a while, and that can typically provides opportunity. So if you're looking to make sales here for old crop or remaining old crop bushels, just remember to have some offers in place, because some of this stuff happens when we're all sleeping at night, some of these rallies we see. So just have your offers out there at prices that are realistic, and have those set in there in case we do get some continued jumpiness in this market.
And Mike Zuzula, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Your final word.
Trying to blend together the report and the technicals that we started out with, Todd, I think, you know, the last week's low in lead month corn and beans is also the monthly low, 1142.5 in beans, 409 in the corn. If we take those out on a weekly close after a friendly report and a South American weather issue that we still haven't solved, and the lowest ending stocks and soybeans since 2013-2014 marketing year, I think that 11 to 1120 target in beans is a place maybe we could try to buy back some, and maybe 393 to 401 would be the next downside target. to look for some re-ownership, but I'm very much in line with Aaron with the idea that the fundamentals should allow for another retest of the upside, but have your orders ready and be prepared for that volatility, especially the spread volatility between corn and beans and wheat and corn.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Aaron Curtis, Ellen Dearden, and Mike Suslow. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.